Force is strong in my family. My father has it. I have it. My sister has it. You have that power too.
Tuscaloosa, Alabama. This is Aspect Radio. I'm Corey Kraft.
And I'm Ben Flanagan. Welcome to Aspect Radio. We are going to be joined here by our pal, our buddy, who's with us every episode, who doesn't have a mic in front of him. Andrew Richardson, our producer, is actually going to be on mic this week to talk about some of the brand new trailers that we have seen, the world has seen, and the world has reacted to, and we're reacting to it and responding to it just a couple of weeks late. But they've had that big of an impact on people that I think it's necessary. So we are going to talk about some brand new trailers, again, that we have seen and that are hot topics across the world right now. And we're also going to talk about trailers that gave us an emotional response, prompted us to feel something one way or the other as we watched them. Responses that had nothing to do with how we felt about the actual movies once we saw them, in relation to the trailers that we've seen over the past couple of weeks. And we'll talk a little bit about another project happening from some of our friends at filmnerds.com a little later. But first, this Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens trailer took over the world a couple of weeks ago. And rightly so, because this seems to be the medicine that so many people who were just afflicted by the prequels in the late 90s and the early 2000s, early to mid 2000s, what it did to them, they thought that they would never recover. But here we are, many years later. Disney has bought Lucasfilm. J.J. Abrams has been hired to make the next Star Wars movie. And that gave people hope, I think, initially that
new hope, if you will.
I hate that title, but that we were sort of wandering back on the path that we had strayed from. We got a teaser a while back, and it made people feel all sorts of good because it seemed like J.J. Abrams was doing the Lord's work in making things right again. So we get this new teaser, a second teaser, unveiled at this Star Wars celebration, something that was presented to everybody who couldn't be there in person via YouTube stream. And at the end of it, J.J. Abrams and Kathleen Kennedy are up there and saying, okay, well, everybody, we've got one more thing, and they're basically presenting this teaser, and the stream goes out.
Yeah.
Which was just a deflating feeling, I think, for anybody who was watching it. But then, of course, on Twitter, you see that, oh, no, we get to watch it as they get to watch
it. I was very upset when the stream went out because I was watching it live because I have nothing else to do with my life.
So then we watched this teaser, which is a little less than 2 minutes long. And I don't know about you guys. I know that y'all are big Star Wars fans, like me and like most people who like movies. But it was the first of about 20 times that day that I watched that teaser. And I've watched it many times since. It did prompt an emotional response in me as a movie lover, somebody who is 30 years old now, who has been jaded by the industry, jaded by the Star Wars franchise specifically. It made me feel like a kid again, watching a movie trailer in a way that is hard to describe. The only way I think I can is to say, I want to watch the trailer again right now. I don't know how this movie, The Force Awakens, is going to turn out. It could be a disaster, like the prequels, because God knows we were really excited when we saw the first trailer for The Phantom Menace.
Those all had really good trailers.
Yeah, but if you watch the trailers now, you see things like Jar Jar Binks and all of these other elements about The Phantom Menace that made it so terrible. Exactly. So context doesn't matter. We don't know the story. We haven't heard much dialogue at all. We've seen these images and heard John Williams' music, and we assume now that this is going to be great, and that's what trailers are meant to do. So I'm just curious, did you feel the same way as me, and does it make you feel that much better about what is to come in December this year?
Despite, you know, having been burned by a good trailer before, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I watched, like you, this trailer many, many times the day it came out. The first time I watched it, the way that trailer ends, that last shot of, at long last, Harrison Ford back in character as Han Solo with Chewbacca, it got a little weird. It got a little weird. But that worked for me, especially when you consider, you know, they're standing on the bridge of the Millennium Falcon when they say that. So I suspect it will be some sort of reunion in the context of the film, not only for those characters, but obviously for the audience. And honestly, as excited as I am for folks like John Boyega and Oscar Isaac joining the Star Wars universe, these are actors that I think we like quite a bit. Even someone like Boyega, who's really only had one major film role, but what a great film role that was. You know, I'm not going to lie, I'm very excited to see the original cast return to these roles, and I'm very excited, in spite of all reason, to see Harrison Ford as Han Solo again, despite the fact that, you know, last time he returned to one of his iconic roles, things didn't work out too well. But there's something reassuring about this trailer, this mixture of the familiar elements, like the crashed Star Destroyer on the sands of this desert planet, like, you know, seeing what is being built out of the remnants of the Empire, seeing X-Wings and TIE Fighters, mixing the old with the new, and hearing narration of who sounds like Luke Skywalker, who's saying a lot of Luke Skywalker-esque things. There's something that is, you know, it evokes nostalgia, sure. You could call it pandering, but there's something almost comforting about it. You know, like an old friend saying, don't worry. Don't worry. We got this. We've got some computer stuff here, but we're not going to get lost in all that like George did in those prequels. You're in good hands. You're in the hands of a fan like yourself. So relax. And I did.
Even if you want to see it through the lens of fan service and pandering, the first shot in this trailer where we see whatever vehicle is streaming across the desert and we see the crashed Star Destroyer, I think that shot alone washed away so much of the pain people still had from the prequels. And people thought, and I mean, I personally did. I saw that and I thought, wow, that's a great concept alone. And I'm in because of that shot, right? Yeah. So even if you want to see it as pandering or fan service, fine with me. We needed this. That's what I thought as I was watching this trailer. We Star Wars fans, we needed this trailer. We needed this feeling again. We didn't need to keep on thinking and living this. It's not even a lie anymore. Like, we want to believe that, but it's the reality of where Star Wars was before this all happened. It had been wrecked. It had been ruined. And George Lucas created it, so he was perfectly within his right to do whatever he wanted with the property. It's his baby. But what he did to it, it just completely compromised any speck of trust that he had with fans from that point on.
Yeah, it sure didn't work.
No, and I don't know about you. I don't know if you had that same feeling of, okay, now you just said it seems to be in good hands. And again, we don't know how it's going to really turn out ultimately, but it felt right again. Mm-hmm. It felt like, okay, we're okay now. I think that Abrams gets it based on this. And you're a guy who is a big Star Trek fan.
Yes.
And somebody who thinks J.J. Abrams, when handed another beloved franchise like Star Wars, you think he, in some ways, screwed it all up.
Well, I like one out of his two Star Trek movies.
Yeah, but your affinity for the first Star Trek movie has waned since then, hasn't it?
Because I feel like he did try to turn, you know, that franchise into Star Wars. You know, Star Trek at its best is a bit more about, you know, more cerebral themes of space exploration and diplomacy and, you know, not high swashbuckling space adventure.
Right.
You know, that's Star Wars territory. If anything, those two Star Trek movies, though their merits are debatable, seemed like almost an audition reel for this.
Yeah.
And no, I don't like Star Trek Into Darkness one bit. I think Star Trek Into Darkness is kind of disastrous, but it's a nice looking movie at the very least, and so is this trailer. You know, I guess that's all just to say that, you know, we're just not going to know until we see it, until
yeah.
we see what material they're working with, you know, what the actors are putting into it. I suspect in the spirit of a Star Wars movie and having a director who knows how to work with actors, it will at least be somewhat more lively than the prequels. You know, all that's to say, you know, I don't have any doubt that Abrams can craft an image. Obviously, he can craft an image. He's done it in several films already, and he's shown that he can capably compose action. My qualms with Star Trek Into Darkness aren't necessarily translated to the action sequences in that film, because a lot of those were actually fairly interesting. I think that, you know, as the Enterprise is falling to Earth, you know, that sequence where they're sort of running around the hallways of the Enterprise, while that doesn't make one bit of sense, and it doesn't make any sense as to how they reached that point, as a moment of filmmaking, as an action sequence, not bad.
Corey,
by that point in the movie, I was too annoyed to enjoy it.
Well, before you say that, I just want to point out how many nice things you've said here about Star Trek Into Darkness.
Maybe I'm feeling more charitable toward J.J. Abrams because of the goodwill of this that this trailer inspired.
You seem like a changed man, no, and I just
I'll never watch Star Trek Into Darkness again.
Oh, you're crazy. That movie's really good.
Garbage.
I'm sorry, you're
absolute
crazy.
Absolute garbage.
Let's not get on a tangent here, but it gave me complete confidence in J.J. Abrams as the future director of a Star Wars
movie. You know
what?
I'll say this. One thing that almost gave me more confidence in this movie than the trailer. Watching that Star Wars Celebration panel and seeing these character designer engineers bring out the new droid that they've built for this movie.
Which was actually a real thing on
BB-8.
The stage. Yeah.
This, you know, it's what fans have sort of dubbed the soccer ball droid that you see in that first teaser trailer.
Yeah. And in the new one.
Yeah, and in the new one briefly. Just sort of a rolling ball with a little disc sort of floating on it.
Yeah.
And it's a physical prop. It's a functioning, actually moving robot that they built for this movie. And just seeing that was almost as remarkable as seeing anything from the film.
Yeah.
Any footage from the film. Just to know that these guys are putting that level of detail and care into getting this right. And just seeing, you know, that prop actually roll out onto the stage and boop and beep around and looking at it as a prop and still thinking, you know, for the first time in any Star Wars related thing in some time, I wonder how they did that.
Yep.
That's really cool.
Yep. A concern I guess I had as I was watching it over and over again, something I kept telling myself is we're not really seeing much story here. We're not hearing much character interaction.
Yeah, the mystery
we're not
box
hearing dialogue.
Is still closed.
But then you go back and watch, and there's imagery in it, and there are shots in it that tell stories unto themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, again, the first shot of the Star Destroyer that has crashed into the desert planet, that to me says so much more than all of the meandering, mindless dialogue they spew in those prequels during whatever Senate committee hearings or meetings that they're in. You know what I mean? Or like this shot of R2-D2, this like slow push in is what I gather is probably Luke Skywalker in the same shot as R2-D2. I don't know. I could be wrong there. But, you know, the handing off of a lightsaber, the shot of John Boyega taking the hand of a character off screen, so much of this speaks so much more than words have in three entire movies. And it reassures me that they are trying to tell a story here, visually and, as I'm sure we'll soon find out, with good dialogue again. But everything we're saying here, all these positive vibes that we're getting from this trailer, it could all go down the drain. I don't think that's going to happen based on what we've seen so far.
I think Kathleen Kennedy is just about the best person to take the reins of Lucasfilm.
Yeah.
She's very, very smart, and she seems to want to get it right. And by hiring people like Lawrence Kasdan, J.J. Abrams, in the future, Rian Johnson and Gareth Edwards, you know, these are all filmmakers that a lot of people trust to put care. And even if you don't like all of their films, they put care, they put thought into everything.
And the thing is George Lucas has reached this status of like a villain of the franchise, right? People see him as a guy who ruined this and somebody who should stay away from it and leave it in the hands of people who care about it. But he will always, too, be remembered as the guy who created it in the first place and is responsible for the joy that we have out of those first three movies. J.J. Abrams and these other filmmakers that you mentioned, they are going to have to stay as reverent as possible to what he initially gave us. And they obviously are, and they're obviously fans who want to handle this with such care. But it almost feels like the vibe that I'm getting from it and that everybody seems to be getting from it is, we got this, guys. We're fixing this. But if you can't explicitly say that, because it would be a total shot at George Lucas and what he did with the last three movies.
And you know, I don't think anybody wants to do that. And honestly, I mean, I get the feeling that at the Star Wars celebration, if Lucas had walked out onto the stage, he would have been greeted warmly and very, very enthusiastically. I'm not certain that that would have necessarily been true as recently as a few years ago. Maybe it would have. I don't know. Star Wars fans are, there's a certain amount of hero worship when it comes to Lucas. And perhaps, as you said, he created the thing they love.
Yep.
Maybe that's, you know, that's not undeserved. But, you know, they also have this sort of love-hate thing with the prequels, too. Anyway, one of the interesting things about Lucas, though, is that after the sale of Lucasfilm to Disney, when you see his name in the news, it's inevitably news of some sort of charitable donation.
Yeah.
He participated in a panel, I think, at Tribeca at the film festival, maybe just a week or so ago. If anything, it just feels like getting this off of his back has sort of loosened him up. I don't remember hearing all that much from George Lucas when he was still in control of Lucasfilm, and now that he's not, now that he's, for all intents and purposes, retired, it seems like he's a lot more, I don't know, in the public eye than he's been in a long time. Maybe this is a good thing for him, too.
Yeah, and there are arguments out there that George Lucas has tarnished his legacy and reputation, and I hear you, but we'll always have the original trilogy. We'll always have American Graffiti and all these other great things that he has done. And look, yes, the prequels exist. And yes, he did a bad, bad thing, right, to something that we love. There is no Force Awakens trailer without George Lucas, right?
Right.
So I think everybody's still got a lot of love for him.
Yeah, I think so.
Regardless of what happens. And again, we feel great about this.
That's how it starts. The fever, the rage, the feeling of powerlessness that turns good men cruel.
Moving on to the other trailer that came out that same week.
Are we going to continue these good vibes?
That Friday night, actually, when it seemed like nobody was paying attention. There was no big panel or celebration in a giant theater or anything. This is something that just trickled out onto Twitter.
Well, it kind of had to because their hand was forced.
It was forced, but it's like, what can we do now after this Star Wars thing has happened and the entire universe and galaxy has sung the praises of this teaser trailer? How do you follow that? What, a leak happened, right? And the trailer popped up on the internet. So, okay, Warner Brothers and DC had to release the Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice teaser trailer. The first look at this highly anticipated follow-up to Man of Steel, a movie that we here at Aspect Radio love.
Oh, pump the brakes.
And
hold up.
obviously we can't wait for what Zack Snyder and company do next with this universe.
Champing at the bit.
And these characters. Okay, so there are so many skeptics out there about what DC and Warner Brothers are doing with these characters, these properties, as a reaction, obviously, to the success that Disney and Marvel are having with the Avengers and all of these other great characters everybody seems to love. You're one of those.
Yes.
You don't like Man of Steel.
Not at all.
And you don't like what you've heard and read and seen from this Batman Superman movie coming up. So now we have pieces of the film in front of us. Sights and sounds and what Zack Snyder has been up to. You saw the trailer. You hated it before you watched it. How did you feel after you watched it?
I really didn't like it after I watched it. But I'll say this. Say what you will about Man of Steel and say what you will about most of Zack Snyder's movies, and we'll probably talk about this in a bit. Zack Snyder's movies usually have extraordinary trailers. Zack Snyder's movies are usually sold quite well by whatever studio has produced them since Dawn of the Dead. I guess it's been Warner Brothers. Those trailers for these movies signify whether the movie lives up to it. An event. Think about the Watchmen trailer or the 300 trailer, or we will talk about this later, the Man of Steel trailer, that great Americana evoking trailer that seemed like the trailer for a Terrence Malick Superman movie. Of course, Man of Steel did not live up to that, but the, you know, that trailer was a perfectly crafted way to, well, sell a Superman movie. This trailer falls flat. Not only in the wake of something like the Star Wars trailer, but in the wake of every other trailer that's been made to sell a Zack Snyder movie. And that's not to say that some of the ideas that the trailer presents are not potentially interesting. The idea of, in the wake of the destruction at the climax of Man of Steel, Superman being regarded as almost this deity figure, but also regarded with hostility potentially from humankind, I think is potentially interesting, but it doesn't look good. It doesn't, you know, none of the busy sort of cacophony of voices, those don't really register. I think you hear Jeremy Irons as Alfred there. You hear Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor.
Charlie Rose.
Yeah, you do hear Charlie Rose. And I think possibly Neil deGrasse Tyson. Along with these shots of, you get like a couple shots of Superman and you get some Gotham there. And you get Batman, and by the end of the trailer it's just like, well, whatever.
No, okay, let me stop you here, okay? Because you're just trailing off and you're cesspool of negativity.
Tell me why this is in any way of interest.
Because it is an excellent trailer, Corey. In the tradition of Zack Snyder, it is another really well-crafted and designed trailer. And as somebody who is an optimist about this series and where this movie in particular can go, and about things in general in life, this, to me, is what they needed to do to reassure at least a portion of the skeptics out there.
Who was reassured by this and why?
I've heard more skeptics out there say, okay, the trailer's cool or whatever, but it's still going to suck. The attitude just boggles my mind. Okay, you didn't like Man of Steel for really strange reasons.
No, they're pretty good reasons.
And, okay, you don't like Ben Affleck cast. I guess you're frustrated with the fact that it is or isn't really a sequel to Man of Steel. It's more of a Batman movie than a Superman movie. Is that such a bad thing on the surface? I don't think so. For me, this trailer tells a story, and a new kind of Superman story. In fact, a darker in tone and look Superman story. We see this character in a way that we've never seen him with, like you say, mankind sort of pitted against him, with a character that we love so much. There's a built-in affinity and adoration for Batman, especially when it comes to, as opposed to Superman. And we all know who we're going to be rooting for in this scenario, or who we would be. And I think that it puts Superman in an interesting and compromising position where we already love Batman, and we probably, like mankind, feel the same way about Superman as a result of the Man of Steel movie. Fans in general who have just lashed out in such an unusual way since that movie came out, since a lot of people said that they liked that movie and have changed their minds. I think that this movie and what this trailer suggests is that They're going to try to make us like Superman despite all of the odds against him, especially the main one being that the guy we love so much, Batman, is his antagonist.
I mean, I think you're bringing your like pro-Batman agenda into this a little bit.
It's a Batman movie. Why wouldn't I?
It's a Batman and Superman.
Yeah, but there's lots of Batman in that trailer, and that's a good sign, right?
I don't know if it is.
You didn't like the Batman stuff from that trailer that you saw?
Not really.
The look, the suit, oh, you're crazy, man. I think that is just completely...
I think at least that's at least in part because we've had 7 Batman movies already. Well, 8 if you count the Adam West film. The last Batman movie that sort of wrapped up Christopher Nolan's trilogy was 3 years ago. And now they're saying, well, time to launch a new one. You know, honestly, I look at that trailer and I think, oh, this again.
Oh, no, not another Batman movie. Not another movie about the character we obviously love as much
as
we
do. I don't want to see Zack Snyder's mopey, Frank Miller-inspired Batman.
Is Batman not mopey? Is Bruce Wayne not a mopey character?
This whole thing just seems dour. And I'm just not interested in that. I'm not into it.
Corey is clearly just anti-Batman.
Yeah, suddenly, which is strange. Is Batman not one of the darkest pop cultural characters in history?
And he has had his pop culture moment recently.
So?
So why can't we have a Superman movie or a series of Superman movies that captures Superman as Superman?
Because Superman's not an interesting character.
I disagree. And I think that there is a way to make Superman,
maybe,
you know,
but
an all-American Boy Scout type.
Nobody's done it yet. We've tried a number of times, and it's never worked.
It worked twice.
When?
In the 70s.
Those movies, okay. Yeah.
Y'all are crazy. Do not.
I don't care
do
for
not
those
talk
movies.
Mess for Superman and Superman 2 here today. That's just
so
wrong-headed.
Here's what I like about... So I actually, when I watched the trailer, I didn't like it. I thought, this is a really weird direction to take. And the more I've sort of pondered on it, and really as you guys have been talking, I've been thinking, this is different. Like, this isn't really something we've seen before. It may turn out to be awful.
Yeah.
But does the shot of Batman in the armored suit, obviously probably a kryptonite suit, is that not like at least interesting and make you think, oh, I wonder how he did that, or
yeah,
I wonder how that happened,
I mean,
how we got to this
yeah.
point.
It's a Dark Knight Returns thing. I mean,
I understand
this
that.
This is like...
I haven't read those, though, so...
It's drawing from Frank Miller fairly significantly when it comes to the look and the feel of an older Batman.
It energizes that feeling, that very obvious foundational feeling about this whole scenario in the first place of... How is Batman going to pull this off, right? Like, that's the feeling that it's supposed to give you. Like, a Batman versus Superman movie or comic or story or whatever, it launches this ridiculous debate of, well, Superman just could rip his arms off and just throw him off a building and be over, right? And I mean, it causes those kind of just fun and mindless conversations, but it gave me that feeling again, as skeptical and as jaded as I could possibly be about it. It put me back in the mindset of a regular moviegoer and wondering where they could take this story. And I got excited about it. And look, Corey, the question I have for you and all these people who insist it's going to be so bad, and it already is, what if it's good?
Well, if it's good,
what if
I'll
it
be
turns
thrilled.
Out that it, but why can't you go in with more of a clean slate?
It's hard to do that because this DC movieverse, this shared sort of series of franchises, started off on such a sour note for me with Man of Steel. I dislike Man of Steel that much. And building everything off of a foundation that is at best already quite shaky for me, kind of hard for me to just go in with a completely open heart saying, all right, Zack Snyder, you really messed up last time, but I'll let you do it again.
It seems to me, though, that a lot of that's, I wouldn't say being thrown out the window, but correct me if I'm wrong, but I got the impression that Superman's kind of the, at least a little bit, portrayed as the villain.
Well, I think that...
And that's really not how Man... I mean, Man of Steel ended that way with sort of the destruction of Metropolis, but ultimately, I mean, he came as the good guy.
But like I said, I think that what I gathered from this trailer is that Superman will ultimately be the good guy here, but the odds are so stacked against him, that it's going to be up to the movie to convince us that we need to root for Superman again, right? The character itself, because I think that there is that question of whether or not Superman is a viable, marketable, or interesting character for the movie-going public, right? Will we respond to him in the way that we have responded to Batman and these other Marvel characters that have caused us to throw our money at these movies in ways that we haven't Superman movies before? That's the challenge that Warner Brothers and DC's have. In the 70s. And look, we're talking about Man of Steel, a movie that made $700 million worldwide. So people who think people hate Superman or everybody hates that movie, it's got $700 million saying, not that much, right?
I thought it was okay.
I like Man of Steel, okay?
We've established that.
We have many times. But I think the people who hate it as much as you do hate it for reasons other than what is actually in the movie itself.
I mean, that's possible.
That's not a reason to hate a movie, though.
I'm not talking about myself.
Well, I kind of am.
There's also no backstory for Batman here. I mean, we're going
we don't know
where he's coming from. We don't know. There's in the shot-by-shot, there's like a glass case that, I don't know, maybe that has Robin's costume, but Robin who's dead. Like, maybe he's gotten to the point where he's lost.
That's a Dark Knight Returns
thing. Exactly. So there's some interesting parts on that end, too, even if you don't like the Superman part of it.
It's just so, at this point, I mean, you guys say that it's something you've never seen before, but I guess as a comics guy...
We're talking about movies. Yeah. We've never seen this before in film before, and that's what excites me. I've never seen Superman on screen like this.
But I'm just not interested in that.
Why? I'm
just not. I guess I can't really explain why, other than this sort of iconography is old hat in the comics. On the big screen, I'm not really interested in seeing brooding superheroes brood anymore. I feel like I want something else. And Zack Snyder is a talented enough filmmaker who can compose grand scale action on an awe-inspiring level that, you know, I don't want him to shade everything in darkness and have it rain all the time and have everybody scowling at each other and all that crap. I mean, I don't know. I don't know really how to explain it
Man of Steel was a happy movie. I walked out of it thinking they felt good about it and about the character and about the direction that it would go.
I walked out of it infuriated that Superman participated in the leveling of a major American city.
That was out of his hands, though.
And that was his first big fight.
Yeah, it's like he just got here and these evil people followed him. He had no choice but to protect the city from these people who were destroying it, right?
So he protected it by destroying it?
I don't understand.
I hear that argument.
The criticism
every time I have this conversation,
no,
I hear that argument,
it's
and
ridiculous.
I have not bought it once.
It's ridiculous.
Yet. My argument toward it is he is an adult, but as a superhero, he is a baby. I mean, he has not been doing it.
Yeah,
long.
He's inexperienced.
He's not experienced enough to be able to protect the city, like the buildings, and fight the bad guys at the same time.
I don't really get, though, why one has to sort of grow into having a moral compass of making sure innocents don't get slaughtered.
I'm not saying it's a moral compass. I'm saying it's an ability thing, learning to manage the situation.
Yes,
thing.
Exactly. Next time, there will be less collateral damage in whatever battle I'm a part of, right? I mean, did he not save the world in Man of Steel?
Yeah, but, I mean, it's not as if the movie, I don't know, this is probably going to fall on deaf ears, but, like, you know, half the city collapses, and, you know, the movie immediately cuts to characters cracking jokes. You know, there's no weight to it. I mean, I guess you could say
it seems like there is in this movie. In this, okay.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. It seems like Batman versus Superman is going to build off of that. Which
good.
You
know, that's what they're supposed to.
That's
do.
An interesting direction.
They have a responsibility. They've got a narrative responsibility to do that, and I hope that they follow up in an interesting way. They have to, right?
You know, it's just I'm not filled with confidence about it.
Well,
I'm just not.
At the very least, this movie, at least from a strictly visual standpoint and tonal, according to the trailer, looks nothing like Man of Steel.
Yeah, all right. No, that's
so
true.
It's changing, at least. That's a good change.
I'm not sure it's changing in a direction that I like.
Well, you didn't like Man of Steel, so.
True.
How much worse could it really get in your mind?
This seems like it is magnifying the stuff I did not like about Man of Steel. It's moving.
But it looks nothing like Man of Steel.
I know. It's saying, all right, well, you know, Man of Steel is like this Superman movie, but we made Superman sad and edgy, and we made it like Batman. Now we're going to throw Batman into the mix and make it really like Batman. And I'm just like, oh, no, back up, you know.
Yeah.
I think you're reading a little too much into this. There's one shot where where Superman looks a little sad. And that's it.
The whole trailer is so dour, though.
Well, that's a trailer.
It's dark.
Though.
It's a dark movie.
If that's indicative of the direction it's going in, I don't want that. If it's trying to sell this movie with that mood, I think that's the wrong direction.
Yeah. What did you think of the line that Batman says in the trailer? I love that.
I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. Let's end it on that note.
Corey. I just want to say, just for the record, uh-huh. I'm not a Ben Affleck hater. I think that that's potentially pretty inspired casting. I think that, if anything, it seems like this movie is taking on too much in regards to filling this movie with cast members and iconography. But all of the cast members who have been announced are cool. You know, I like the idea of Jesse Eisenberg as a bratty Lex Luthor. It's just, you know, building off that foundation again of Man of Steel and amping up the darkness. It just worries me.
Yeah.
I'm open to enjoying this movie. So Lord knows I would like to.
We're getting bits and pieces of several other projects, whether it's a trailer or a promotional still photograph of these projects that we are either, again, highly anticipating or anticipating hating in a huge way. And one of those, if we want to stick to the DC universe quickly, is this film Suicide Squad that is on the horizon for 2016. And an image that we got yesterday was the first one of Jared Leto, who has been famously or infamously cast here as the Joker in this movie. And the image itself, Corey, I'll give you the privilege of describing what you see in the photo that they released.
He looks like a juggalo.
If the Joker became a juggalo.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I said he looked like Ninja from Deont Ward at first.
One of us thinks that could be a good thing.
Well, maybe, but for me, this is, you know, when you hear that Jared Leto was cast as the Joker, you know, I don't know about you. My first thought was,
No. Because I think, okay, he wins the Oscar for Dallas Buyers Club, but I don't think Dallas Buyers Club is at all a good reflection of his ability as an actor. I look to something like Panic Room as a really good Jared Leto performance, and one as a villain, too, that carried a David Fincher movie. I thought he was exceptional in that. And so that gives me confidence that he could pull this off.
I'm not the biggest Jared Leto fan in the world, but for me, the Suicide Squad, this first still, this first promotional still, is like Jared Leto as Joker, worst case scenario. Covered with tattoos, this is the stupidest damn thing. He got a tattoo that says damaged right at his hairline.
Yeah, it's like Hot Topic temporary tattoos.
It kind of is.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, if I'm being totally honest, Suicide Squad as a premise for me at this moment is more interesting than Batman versus Superman, because this is something that neither DC nor Marvel has really tried yet on the big screen. This super villain centric team up movie that almost feels like a Dirty Dozen style thing, you know, teaming up a lot of notorious supervillains, including some also played by Will Smith, Margot Robbie, I think, and Jai Courtney, though I'm not sure that's a selling point.
No.
But the idea of sort of a supervillainous Dirty Dozen team assembled to do this sort of covert work for the government, the stuff that they can't do on the books, that's pretty fascinating. Directed by David Ayer, which, you know, Fury's good, but David Ayer is kind of hit or miss for me. You know, I like the idea, but if this is going to be like DC supervillains by way of, I don't know, like a gang character from End of Watch, I don't know, man. I don't know. I mean, that image, I mean, it looks so goofy.
That's all we've seen so far, right? Has there been anything else?
That's the first official look. But David Ayer is actually, you know, on his Twitter account, being very forthcoming about production details. You know, he's taken cast photos. But this is the first official promotional still.
Yeah, it's a jarring image for sure. And it's no wonder that people are having such extreme reactions to it. And a lot of them have been really funny. And I doubt it surprises David Ayer or Jared Leto at all after they decided to release this specific image.
It can't.
No, but like we've said with this Batman and Superman thing, it's different. And I'm anxious to see it in action before I start judging it and where it could go, because I have no idea. And I especially have no idea based on this particular design that they've decided to unleash on us.
It's not as though he's going to be in the whole movie shirtless and screaming. Like, that's not the whole movie is not going to be shirtless.
I don't know. I've seen some
screaming.
David Ayer movies, and I wouldn't put that past him.
I just saw Fury a few weeks ago and really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay, so other trailers that we have seen recently. We've seen a new one from Jurassic World. We've seen one since we last recorded from Spectre, the new James Bond movie. We've seen a trailer for this Johnny Depp, Whitey Bulger film, Black Mass. Fantastic Four is another one. There have been a handful of trailers that have just popped up and caused a stir on Twitter and among movie nerds out there. For you, out of the rest of these trailers that we've seen so far, which has, I guess, excited you more than any other?
Spectre.
Yeah.
I was at a meeting recently and your name came up.
I'm flattered London is still talking about me.
It wasn't MI6.
You're a kite. Dancing in a hurricane, Mr. Bond.
Welcome, James. It's been a long time. And finally, here we are.
Coming off of Skyfall, which I think we both agree is an excellent, not just James Bond movie, but an excellent movie.
Yes.
How could it not be Spectre, you know, reteaming Daniel Craig as James Bond with Skyfall director Sam Mendes, throwing in a lot of really potentially exciting elements, such as the return of that super villainous organization, Spectre, and perhaps Blofeld, Bond's...
Come on,
ultimate.
Perhaps, come on.
That's been shrouded in mystery,
sure.
Given certain casting. Christoph Waltz is in this movie, and he has insisted that he is not playing Blofeld, but I think that we are all pretty certain
right.
that he's playing Blofeld.
I like that you said shrouded in mystery, because that is what this trailer is, too, and this story, and it's such a creepy, cool little snippet of what is to come, and it is just setting a brutally dark and awesome tone.
And what I like about it is that it not only seems like a direct sequel to Skyfall, of course taking place in the aftermath of the sort of game-changing events of the end of that movie, but also with the appearance of the character of Mr. White in this trailer, a direct sequel to Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace. So it looks really much like, you know, a movie that's tying all of the Craig Bond films together.
So as a Bond film fan, after years of these not having any sort of narrative continuity and being isolated films and stories and incidents, now that they have created a continuity and they are telling a story with multiple films and the same actor and character, do you like that?
I actually do. I don't know that I like it more or less. You know, it's just a different way of approaching the character. We talked so much already about different ways of approaching characters.
Right.
I will say that I think audiences now probably demand a level of continuity that had previously not really been expected.
Yeah.
You know, we have so many interconnected film universes that are so popular at the moment that I think there's probably a pressure on the Bond franchise to sort of embrace as well. But I think that continuity potentially adds a possible way of delving further into the Bond character than really has ever been done before. You know, we get a lot more about Bond as a person in Casino Royale and Skyfall. And if the trailer for Spectre is any indication, this is going to go even deeper than that. And honestly, you know, I think there's some purists out there who probably are sort of shaking their heads and saying, we don't need that, though. That's not what's interesting about the character. But I think that's what's interesting about Craig's version of the character. And I'm all about it.
Absolutely. And Spectre is scheduled to open November 6th, 2015. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
We're going to get Spectre and Star Wars this year.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
In the summer of 1994, there was a lunch. Me, John Lasseter, Pete Docter, the late Joe Rampt, all sat down. Toy Story was almost complete. And we thought, well, geez, if we're going to make another movie, we got to get started now. So at that lunch, we knocked around a bunch of ideas that eventually became A Bug's Life, Monsters Incorporated, Finding Nemo. The last one we talked about that day was the story of a robot named Wally.
Well, the last thing that I want to do here today on this episode is go back to trailers. Obviously, we had a lot to say about these brand new trailers that have stirred something up within us one way or the other. Obviously, we're super pumped about Star Wars. One of us is pumped about the Batman Superman movie and all the other ones we talked about earlier. I wanted to sort of reminisce on trailers like those that have provoked an emotional response out of us, whether that's happiness or anger, sadness, whatever it happened to do to either make you want to see it, make you angry. Most of these that I have on my list are ones that I loved. I ended up really liking a lot, and some of them I was lukewarm on, yeah. And one of them I downright loathe to this day. So let's just talk about a few of these and go back to those moments in time where we were just captivated in a movie theater for a minute or two and everything seemed right about the movie world and, sure. and about these movies in particular. So I'll start things off. This doesn't have to be a formal numbered list or anything. We can just go through ones that stuck out to us. Recently in 2007, and maybe the trailer came out in 2008, I should say, maybe the trailer came out the year before. I can't remember the exact date when I saw it, but one of the better teaser trailers I had seen in a while came from Pixar's WALL-E. The trailer's about a minute and a half long, but it's a pretty non-traditional way to sell your movie these days. They used to do it a lot back in the old days. You know, people like Alfred Hitchcock and Cecil B. DeMille would get in front of a camera and tell you about their movie that they've got coming out. Andrew Stanton is not Alfred Hitchcock. He's not Steven Spielberg, a guy who has name brand recognition when it comes to his movies. Yet, he appeared on screen and his name appeared on screen and he sold WALL-E by telling a very short story about this famed lunch that was attended by these big names of Pixar, guys like John Lasseter, Pete Docter, and as he puts it, the late Joe Rampt. And himself, where they brainstormed all of these ideas after completing Toy Story. Movies like Bug's Life and Finding Nemo and Monsters, Inc. were a result of this meeting, and he points out the last film they talked about was WALL-E. It set such an interesting tone and spoke to the imagination that these guys all had and what they had cooking with Pixar in its early days and what it would become. And it just made me really feel good about that company, the films that they had made, and how good they felt about this germ of an idea that became WALL-E, which is a movie that we all love, obviously. It's one of Pixar's best. And to me, that was just a really fun and unique way to sell your movie with very little. at that point.
Yeah, that's a great example, and I remember that trailer very vividly. As an aside, I just want to, and I think we may have mentioned it already on the last show, but just in case we haven't, I just want to point out how really great the trailer for Pixar's next film, Inside Out, is.
Yeah.
That's looking very, very special.
And, yeah.
That trailer makes, in some way, that trailer evokes a response from me every time I see it. That's very rapidly approaching the top of my most anticipated movies of the summer list. And even though we set that list last week, it might be different if you ask me today. I mentioned it earlier, but for me, one of the most memorable trailers of the last few years is still the Man of Steel trailer, that first teaser.
Yep.
Did that debut with The Dark Knight Rises, or did I make that up? Was it after that?
I don't know. And we may be talking about separate trailers.
I'm talking about the wordless.
Okay.
Or the mostly wordless.
Right, right. Of. Where it's like the kid in the backyard and the dog and all that stuff. Yeah, for sure. That's a good one.
That one, whether fairly or unfairly, set the bar pretty high.
Yeah.
Set a level for Man of Steel to sort of overcome that, honestly, given the film that it was, ultimately probably would not have been possible, even if I had liked Man of Steel, which I did not. But that trailer is so evocative, as I said earlier, of just sort of traditional American iconography. A little boy playing in the backyard, wearing that superhero cape. You have this sort of, if you're being charitable, Terrence Malick style shots of breeze going through clothes on a clothesline in the backyard.
Yeah.
And just this really evocative Hans Zimmer score behind it. You know, that's what I seek in a Superman movie, a Superman that does, you know, much like Christopher Reeve in those classic films, stand up for truth, justice, and the American way. And it seemed like Man of Steel would be that movie. It was not, ultimately for me, that sort of movie, but that trailer was a damn fine way to sell it.
Yeah, for sure. And the third Man of Steel trailer is the one that really got me, and the Ideal of Hope trailer that sort of suggested to a lot of people like you, maybe even who didn't care for it after the first trailer that you just mentioned, like, I'm going to get the Superman movie that I've always wanted. Yeah. And regardless of what happened or not, in that moment, we all couldn't wait.
The advertising for Man of Steel sold me.
So I'm going to stick with Disney real quick and go to the Lion King teaser trailer, the Circle of Life trailer, where they basically...
Oh, it's just that opening?
It's basically the opening sequence, where they play that entire song, and they show you the opening to The Lion King. I couldn't really recall seeing anything like it. I don't think they did that for Aladdin or the Little Mermaid. They would do it like for later Disney movies, like Pocahontas, I think, did it. But it was just such an event of a movie, and obviously just has become such a meaningful film in Disney's history and just animated films history too. But it was just such a, that song has become, especially the opening lines, we'll say, of that song have become such a punchline for so many people, and has been spoofed, you know, with whatever Vine or meme or however you use it these days. But that was just such a cultural event. I remember as a kid, I mean, I was 9 years old, I think, back when that movie came out, and I just have such a vivid memory of seeing that trailer for the first time at the Fox 12 here in Tuscaloosa. So that's one I'll never forget.
Yeah, that's a good one. Another pretty obvious one that we've previously talked about on this show. This filmmaker exercises complete control over his marketing in a way that few filmmakers get the privilege to. You know, I think Paul Thomas Anderson gets to cut his trailers. Not too many other guys do, but you can always tell a David Fincher trailer, and the sort of Fincheriest David Fincher trailer is that first trailer for The Social Network.
Yep.
With the cover for Radiohead's Creep over sort of a montage of Facebook users and Facebook activity before it really even gets to any footage from the movie.
Yep.
And it paints such a icy portrait that perfectly captures the tone of Fincher's Mark Zuckerberg rags to riches American success story. You know, we love that movie, but that trailer was, you know, the first bit of marketing that I think worked to convince the mainstream that a Facebook movie, as it had been derisively called, could in fact be, you know, what it ended up becoming.
Yeah, for sure. And if we were doing a list of the greatest movie trailers of all time, then I think that that one is on the Mount Rushmore of movie trailers for sure. It's just incredible. And it's one that I still revisit to this day. Eyes Wide Shut had an incredible teaser trailer. And we were all far too young to see this movie, I'm sure, in the theater. I ended up seeing it in the theater. I mean, I was 14 years old seeing Eyes Wide Shut at the Bama Six in Tuscaloosa.
How much did you get out of it?
Plenty. What I see today is what I remember the time I saw it in the theater.
I was just curious.
But the trailer is so cool because it's Stanley Kubrick using this Chris Isaac song, this very cool Chris Isaac song, and showing Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise in that famed scene in front of the mirror towards the beginning of it, and you see these very short glimpses of other things to come in the movie. I personally think of Stanley Kubrick as a cool filmmaker and his movies being cool, but that transcended cool for me, that trailer for that movie, and for him to use that song in the movie was a great callback to that trailer and what he promised with it. And that's a movie that I love to revisit.
It's a great movie.
I honestly, in a great year, looking back, if I have to go back and pick a favorite movie from 1999, it's Eyes Wide Shut.
Really?
Yes. I love it. And
I'd have to go with, the movie with the next trailer that I was going to mention.
Do it.
Magnolia.
There are stories of coincidence and chance and intersections and strange things told, and which is which and who only knows. And we generally say, well, if that was in a movie, I wouldn't believe it.
I'm Stanley Spector.
I'm Frank T.J. Mackey.
I'm Jimmy Gator.
I'm Phil Parma.
I'm Dixon.
I'm Chris Gadani Smith.
I'm Linda Partridge.
I'm Earl Partridge.
I'm Officer Jim Curry.
I'm Claudia Wilson Gator.
These strange things happen all the time.
Just talked about Paul Thomas Anderson
and
the Magnolia trailer, which introduces each of that film's sprawling cast of characters with Ricky Jay's narration. With, you know, footage shot especially for the trailer as these characters are essentially introducing themselves. Magnolia is a hard film to sort of sum up. I imagine that was a real devil to market. You know, well, it's about these guys and they meet each other crying and screaming for 3 hours. But, you know, that trailer in Paul Thomas Anderson's very concise, clever way somehow manages to introduce the idea that this is a group of damaged characters who are going to collide over the course of this sprawling, surprisingly epic day in Los Angeles. You know, I love that movie. I don't know if that would be my favorite 1999 movie. I think it would.
Yeah, it's a big year. So
yeah, I mean, that's the year of like Being John Malkovich.
Yeah.
That's the year of Eyes Wide Shut, The Matrix, South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut.
Blair Witch Project.
Yeah. South Park also has a great teaser trailer, by the way, if you remember that.
Next for me is a movie that didn't turn out like I'd hoped it would, but it's one that I hope to soon revisit. It's Spike Jonze's Where the Wild Things Are. Which has an amazing trailer that went viral immediately and featured obviously the acoustic version of the Arcade Fire song Wake Up, and just gave people the feels, as people like to say these days, and harken back to the Sendak book, and to see these monsters and just this imagery filmed in a way that I don't think a lot of people thought was possible in a live action movie. And it just made you feel good about the movie before you even saw it, and made you just really root for it to succeed. And you thought, Spike Jonze has captured something about my childhood that I didn't even know was there.
But then you watched the movie.
Yeah, then I watched the movie, and it certainly delivered on aspects of that trailer. And it feels like a Spike Jonze movie, but it just didn't really connect with me in the way that the trailer did.
I watched it a couple of weeks ago, and just it wasn't bad. I just lost interest. I don't know. At a certain point, I got past the monsters, and just, there wasn't much else there.
That's an odd movie, because I had a similar response. That's a movie I admire quite a bit.
Yeah.
I know people who are just destroyed by that movie. They're reduced to puddles by that movie. And it just doesn't have that effect on me. Like something, well, like Spike Jonze's later film Her does. You know, admirable. But I agree, the trailer had much more of an effect on me than the film ultimately did.
Yeah.
I would next like to bring up the 2009 very, very clever, very well edited trailer for Joel and Ethan Coen's A Serious Man.
Yeah, it's a good one.
which ended up being my favorite movie of that year. No big surprise there because I'm a Coen's guy. I think we're all Coen's guys, but that trailer in particular, an offbeat way to sell, again, a movie that's very difficult to sell, and it doesn't really even try to sum up the story. It just sort of edits footage from this movie into sort of a rhythmic, almost music video style of out of context, hilarious sound bites and images from the movie that sort of reflects the chaotic order of Larry Gopnik's increasingly fraught existence in that movie.
Yeah, it's a great one for sure. Another one that reduces people to puddles but seemed to not have much of an effect on your cyborg self is Christopher Nolan's Interstellar. Its trailers, to me, were just fantastic, as Christopher Nolan trailers usually are. Yeah. Those sold the movie that I got, for sure. And again, this is not about the finished product as much as it is about how we felt watching the trailers themselves and the stories that they tried to tell. I can't remember if it was like the second, third, or fourth trailer for this movie, but I just was like, wow, take me there now.
I scribbled down Dark Knight and Inception because those were two that, at the time, were able to really blow me away.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Inception had some incredible trailers. I mean, obviously the introduction of the Inception horn, too, which has become a staple in trailers today, which is a good and bad thing.
And seeing the buildings sort of fold over in on each other, I mean, that was something that was really unique, even if it wasn't in the movie that much.
I really like that movie.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
Yeah, that is a good one.
Do you have another trailer?
I don't. I'm trying to think of one, but
okay.
I've
got three more.
Take it.
You mentioned David Fincher. The teaser trailer for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, using just like a million shots cut to this immigrant song cover by Karen O and Trent Reznor, is just an awesome trailer.
That was good.
Especially with the tagline, the feel bad movie of the year. That's so great. Watchmen had a great trailer.
Yeah,
it did.
I thought about that because I watched that trailer an awful lot.
Yeah, with the Smashing Pumpkins song and just like just beautiful imagery, obviously, just directly lifted off of the book itself. And it introduced a brand new set of superhero characters I bet a lot of people were just totally unfamiliar with.
No, they were.
And made them want to see this movie now as they were watching the trailer. And Corey, I think I actually, you and I might have been in the same theater the first time each of us saw this trailer. I think it was during like a midnight showing of Iron Man.
Yeah.
I could be wrong there, but I remember looking down during the Watchmen trailer and when it came on and Corey, like,
my hands shot in the air.
Yeah, hands shooting in the air, wiggling around in your seat like a kindergartner. And you were much more familiar with the Watchmen property than I was, but I think both of us
were very excited.
Ultimately disappointed, I guess.
I don't think that movie's that bad. It's certainly flawed, but visually, I mean, it's certainly very, very interesting.
Well, and the elephant in the room here, to piggyback on what we talked about in the opening of the show, the Phantom Menace trailer, and we talked about it a little more. And like you said, and we have the context now, and in retrospect, we can go back and pick apart the shots and say, oh, yeah, that was Jar Jar Binks. Oh, yeah, those were those Gungans or whatever. Those were those annoying little droid things, and now that I see it, I know how terrible it is. Jake Lloyd sucked in that movie, you know, but at the time it was just Star Wars, and we got the music, we saw a double-edged lightsaber and just lightsabers in general. It just felt good in many ways, like we do with this Force Awakens trailer. It just felt good to have Star Wars back.
Try to take yourself back and remember when you first saw that double lightsaber, the second one come out, and you're like, oh, man, this is next level.
Oh, yeah, it's like, here we go. Forget the original trilogy.
Right. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, yeah.
Yeah, and we kind of feel the same way about the new lightsaber in the first teaser we had for The Force Awakens, right?
With the crossbar thing?
Yeah.
I have mixed feelings about that.
It doesn't have the same impact as the double-edged with Darth Maul and everything.
Not.
No, but I still was like, oh, that's badass.
The double-edged has direct implications on the type of combat that's going to happen. The crossbar is just kind of like, maybe it will. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, that's the power of these trailers. They make promises.
They do.
The point is that we are duped, and we want to be duped. That's their job. They're supposed to do that. I felt good about being duped, and I have no regrets about The Phantom Menace and wanting to see that movie as badly as I did.
Oh, something that we haven't talked about. Were you duped by the full trailer for Terminator Genesis?
No. No, I feel decidedly unduped at this point.
I would have to agree. That is looking very, very poor.
It is, too. And I've had this talk with somebody recently, a friend of the show, Ben Stark, about what all trailers obviously decide to reveal about their plot.
It seems
stories.
Like this one is throwing a pretty major plot point in
yes,
the mix.
Like he says, something that changes the entire mythology of the franchise. And maybe, I don't know, maybe we're being deceived about what we're actually seeing in the trailer about, you know, in contrast to what actually happens in the movie. But it just makes very little sense to me that you would want to show that to people before they see the movie. Okay, well, I guess that does it.
I guess so.
Yeah, we have a lot to look forward to. We just talked about a lot of stuff we really have no context for or know anything about, but we're hoping for the best here.
Speaking of hoping for the best, we're a week out from the Avengers Age of Ultron.
Are you burnt out on the marketing, or are you pumped for it?
I'm pumped for it.
Good.
How about you?
I'm pumped for it, and I'm so disappointed that in all of the marketing that we get for the Avengers and the oversaturation that Marvel and Disney obviously bestow upon us, as a guy who grew up on souvenir cups at McDonald's,
I want
some Avengers souvenir cups, those big giant plastic souvenir cups.
You just don't see those too often anymore.
You never see them anymore.
You know, the Cobb does them sometimes. I don't know if they're doing them for the Avengers.
I want the feeling of being disappointed with getting the Hawkeye cup every single time. I want that feeling again. Do you remember that Onion tweet? I think there was a while back where it's like, guy misses feeling of driving all the way to video store only to find out that movie he wants is checked out.
Yeah.
I miss that.
I kind of do too.
Yeah. And that's what I want.
Because it makes you find something else.
It's the thrill of the chase. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, no, I'm really pumped for the Avengers. I mean, who wouldn't be?
Well, we're finally kicking off the summer season.
Yeah.
We're going to start seeing a look at all these movies that the trailers have already sold us on. So,
and I bet you'll get some Star Wars cups, Ben.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. But they've got to do their massive Star Wars marketing.
If it's anything like Episode 1 marketing was.
I mean, it's obviously not going to reach that height because I don't think anything ever will again.
No. You know, I've still got one of my Episode 1 giant souvenir cups. Nice. And yeah, I remember the Pepsi cans and Lay's potato chip bags and just everything. And that's something that felt really good to get wrapped up in. You know what I mean? To be a part of
especially at the age we were.
Well, and the action figures with those like microchip things that you put on the microchip reader and they said lines of dialogue from the movie and then you realized that you didn't want to hear it.
We had, my brother, this was in his room, we had an inflatable Darth Maul chair.
Oh, nice.
That's how pumped we were for this ridiculous movie. I actually went back on eBay recently and bought all of the Jurassic Park souvenir cups from McDonald's. So just that I had two of them and I was like, I must have them all.
I think we had those as a kid.
Yeah.
When I was a kid. But
next up is Batman Returns.
I had a lot of Batman Returns cups.
Yeah.
Oh, I had so many Batman
Returns
cups.
I'm telling you, man. That was the best.
Yeah, that was great.
I'm doing a deep dive in summer movie seasons
and
revisiting them like since 1982. Somebody pointed out how big 1982 was for summer movies. I mean, you had like The Thing and Blade Runner and all
E.T.
of these, all of these awesome movies. And so I just started with that and moved on and just like went back in the mid 90s, especially to see just how many movies I saw at the theater during these summers and just how jam packed all these summers were. And there were some awesome movies, but it just made me remember how much crap I saw back when movies cost like $4.50 to see. I miss those days.
You're in for a rough going when you get to 2001.
Oh, man, 2001 is the worst.
Yeah,
it was the absolute
epically terrible summer.
Kicked off by the brilliant Mummy Returns, which is just, what a disappointment. And that's another podcast unto itself, and maybe we'll do that again. I encourage people to go to our friends over at filmnerds.com, where we have launched a new podcast series, Film Nerds Unlimited, which I believe we're in the 7th episode right now since its inception. Yeah, and it's just really fun discussions. I think the way they put it is lo-fi podcasts with high-quality film connoisseurs or something like that. Anyway, it's really fun stuff, good discussions, fun conversations between people who really care about movies, and I encourage people to check it out and subscribe to the filmnerds.com podcast on iTunes. So definitely check that out. Read Corey's stuff on artsbham.com. Read my stuff on al.com. Find us on iTunes at Aspect Radio, same as Twitter and Facebook. Visit Aspect Radio Show. www.thelakeshowramp.com. So do check that out. And one more note I want to make, Corey, is just a special shout out to Richard Corliss, who passed away this week, and somebody who obviously shaped the way we looked at and discussed movies. The longtime Time Magazine and Time.com film critic, who had such a major presence in the voice of film criticism and just general discussion, whether or not you agreed or disagreed with his point of view, he always had a really compelling presence, and his top 10 lists were annual events for a lot of people. So we were very sad to hear about the passing of Richard Corliss.
Really a rich writer. His dispatches from the Cannes Film Festival were an annual must read.
Absolutely. So RIP Richard Corliss, and until next week, I am Ben Flanagan.
And I'm Corey Kraft. This has been Aspect Radio. Thanks for listening. Maybe did a bad, bad thing. 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 You ever loved someone so much you thought your little heart was gone?